Good morning. Today's daf, Ink Suvas is Nun. Today's the daf dedicated to Takana Susha. A little bit later on, I'm going to give you a good mnemonic in terms of remembering one of the Takana Susha. I'd love it if we remembered all of them. We're going to go over not a half dozen, I think five over the course of today. Anyway, so, but a number of institutions were made in Usha. Yesterday we discussed a little bit in terms of not where Usha is, because geographically I'm still struggling in terms of knowing where it is, but I do know the following, and that is, it's one of the stops that the Sanhedrin made as they were exiled outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, by Sheni we're talking about. So the Sanhedrin was sent into Galus, a tailspin, and so they stopped in 10 locations until they finally made it to Tveria, and they established Korn Tveria. But on their way to Tveria, so they stopped in a number of places, one of them being a town called Usha. And in the town of Usha, it's of most notoriety simply because a number of takanos were made in the town of Usha. And so in today's daf, so we're going over a number of takanos that were made in Usha. And why are we learning it here in Ksuvos in the fourth parak? It's very simple, because our Mishnah made reference to one of them. And so that led us to a discussion about one takana. And as long as we're going over the takanos of Usha, so the Gemara goes over all the takanos that were made in Usha. With that stated, we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. Which takana are we talking about? Takana in Usha that you have to support your children. Okay, it sounds like something intuitive. It is intuitive. It's natural that a parent wants to take care of their child. But we're talking about chova. We're talking about an obligation. What is the parent's obligation, specifically the father's obligation, in terms of paying and supporting for his children? So this is well before schooling, education. This is just simple support. We're talking about food right now. So is the father obligated to support his child? So as we already went over yesterday, so up until 6 years of age, so there's an absolute obligation. What is that a predicate of? So this is interesting. I mentioned it yesterday. I'll say it again today. And that is, it's a predicate of the fact that he's got to support his wife. Meaning that is an absolute obligation that's part of tonight's suva. You have to support your wife. So as long as the children are totally dependent on your wife, so then by extension, you have to support those children as well. Up until 6 years of age, they are totally dependent on the mother. And so therefore, you have to support the children as an extension of supporting your wife. After 6 years of age, you're no longer obligated to support them. Again, it's intuitive, it's nice, it's good, it's right, it's, you know, I could use a lot of fancy adjectives to describe it, but it's not an obligation. Not an obligation. So in Usha, they made an institution that a father should be supporting his child after 6 years of age. Until when? So probably up until Bar Bas Mitzvah. Meaning the Gemara is never going to say Beferish, but most probably, most likely, until adulthood. And adulthood is, of course, established by Bar Bas Mitzvah. Okay, so that's the Takanas Usha. And what did we discuss yesterday? And what we're going to continue discussing for the first part of today, finishing up yesterday's daf, and that is that how enforced is this legislation? In other words, it's a takana that was made in Usha, and now was it accepted? Was there widespread acceptance of this takana, or no? In other words, people weren't necessarily bound to this takana, or not people, I should say, rather, but Bezdin. Bezdin was not bound by this takana for reasons which, of course, I'm not perfectly clear why. Meaning, if it's a takana that was made, so then it should be enforceable. But as we're going to see, not the case. Well, we already saw it yesterday. If you recall, yesterday's daf, we already went through a couple of incidents in which the Amoraim put pressure. They applied pressure, social pressure, right? In fact, where did we end off yesterday? So the sad Gemara, but there was a father who was withholding support for his children. And so basically he says, okay, so here's what you're going to do. Go to the center of town, get a soapbox, stand on the soapbox, and start publicly embarrassing the person for not supporting his children. But that's it. In other words, social pressure, meaning no active legislation, no basin's going to come in and take assets, but rather social pressure. Okay. So you're seeing, we already saw yesterday, we're going to see more of it today, is that as much as Takana Susha was an institution, but it did not become enforceable. Still, it's obviously the right thing to do, and you apply pressure, but in other words, Bezdin cannot intervene. Ki hava asa l'kama d'rava. So we're picking up where we left off yesterday. Mem Tesamud Beis, halfway down on the Amud. So they came to Rava. Amrle nichale demidzane banech mitztaka. Right? And basically, again, more social pressure. You want your children to be supported by tztaka? Meaning, this is ridiculous. Right? You have children. They're over the age of six. You should support them. And if you don't, they're going to have to collect from tzedakah. That's not right. That's ridiculous. Okay, again, V'lo amaran el adol amid avan amid kafinalei al karche. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's where where Beis Din is going to intervene, and that is if we're talking about a father who's wealthy. So if the father's wealthy, so then Beis Din will be kofa. Okay, so there is at least on a limited basis there is enforceable legislation that's done in the event that the father's wealthy and he's still refusing to support his children. So that then at that point and only at that point, Beis Din will step in. Ki hada rava kafil la rav nasan bar ami va'apik minei. So the Gemara gives an example of Rava who forced Rav Nasan Bar Ami. Now, Rav Nasan Bar Ami, I just found this part interesting. Meaning, it sounds like he was a Rav. I say a Rav, meaning I don't know if he had a shul, but in other words, he was one of the Amorayim, and he needed compulsion in order to give tzedakah. Now, it happens to be that it wasn't for the support of his children. At least, doesn't sound that way from the Gemara. But there was a special assessment that was made in the town. And he happened to have been a particularly wealthy person. And for whatever reason, he wasn't compliant. He wasn't giving to the assessment. So Rava went over to him and Rava says, you're going to give. In other words, he came by the force of Beis Din that you're going to give. So when somebody's wealthy, there is compulsion. And so over here, if the father's refusing to feed his children, so now, and he's wealthy, so in that circumstance, compulsion can be done. I'm Rabbi Eliya Reish Lakish. Okay, period. Okay, not only am I saying it, but it's actually there. So good. So that was takana number one that we went over. This is all still part of yesterday's daf. We move on. We're going to be going over a number of takana susha that were made today. A lot of them have to do with money and support and an allocation of funds. So let's go. Number two. Am Rabbi Eliya Amar Reish Lakish B'Ushit Kinoa Kosev Kol Nechas Levan Avu V'Ishto Nizona Mehem. Okay, so a person now is going to be writing off all of his assets to his children while he's alive. Okay, who knows, tax shelter, or whatever the motivation is, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so now if the person dies, so that's Yerusha, that's probate. So, but we're not there. In other words, he gifted over all of his assets to his children. Okay, who knows, maybe they want to buy an airline company. Okay, good. So the... So he does so, and now the question is as follows. So now, as all the assets have been now handed over to the children, can they get supported by the estate? They, meaning the parents, the father and his wife, who gave over the assets to the children, can they be supported by the estate? So a takana in Usha that was made so that they will get, in fact, supported by the estate. It's funny. The takanas normally are for things that happen regularly, right? So supporting your children, that happens regularly. Right, how many times is a person giving over the entire estate to the children that the Usha had made a takana?
Did that mean a trust?
Back in the day. In other words, they didn't have the institution, the vehicle of a trust like we have nowadays. But still, it's something like that. Very very similar. It doesn't matter. The point is that they made a takana in Usha that the parents are going to get supported. So. And remind me. And what was the consequence over there?
And you can still get access to the things that you technically make fun of.
Oh, okay, fine. Oh, in other words, you made a neder. Right. Okay, good. You shook my memory. Right, you made a neder. You give everything away, but the there are certain things that you can retain for yourself. But over here, it's your children. In other words, there, if I remember correctly, it was towards Hektish, right? Okay. All right, fine. So, but here, it's to your children. Okay, so anyway, so that was the institution.
So
right, Maskel Rabbi Zervitema. Right. By the way, for those listening at home, I have estate planners here in the room. Okay, so whatever. I'm nervous right now. Anyway, so Maskel Rabbi Zervitema Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman Gedol Mizuam Raman Asan Izonus Minachasav. So who vishtom mi baye? So the Gemara says this is a no-brainer. Meaning, I don't understand this one. This one seems to be so obvious. If the widow is going to be supported by the estate, so for them, for sure. The father who gave over all of his assets to his children, he for sure should be supported by the estate. Now, which widow are we making reference to over here? So let's clarify. So let's say the following happened: a person died, and he leaves over a widow and a daughter. Okay, so what happens to the money? Everyone, please follow the money with me. So number one, the money goes to the daughter, meaning she's Yorish. The daughter's Yorish. Now, had there been a son, obviously the son would have been Yorish, but that's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about where there was only a daughter. So he was survived by his wife, the widow, and his daughter. So the daughter's going to get now the entire estate. However, the widow's going to get supported. So, Amanu Avas, Amanu Nizanus Menachasaf. Okay, so now the widow's going to get supported. Why? Because that's the Tanai Ksuva. Tanai Ksuva says that when a person dies, so his estate's going to support the widow until she decides to remarry. And I say decide, I mean actually remarry. We'll talk more about that later in the Masechta. Anyway, I'm sorry, just wait 1 second. Not yet. Wait, let's first finish the point of the Gemara. So the Amanu Avas, Amanu Nizanus Menachasaf Nisets Abas. So now let's say the daughter gets married. Now, so now what happens is that the estate that she inherited, so now it's going to get a little bit locked up, because we know what happens when a woman gets married, and that is when she comes into a marriage with assets. So now her husband becomes a lokeach over those assets. He's like a purchaser over those assets. So, but still, Amanu Nizanus Menachasaf, but doesn't matter. In other words, those assets that she inherited were designated as support for the widow, and she'll continue getting support for the widow, even though there is a, and I'm putting this in air quotes, even though there is a purchaser of those assets, meaning the husband, it doesn't matter. Let's go even one step further. Mesa Habas, let's say she dies, meaning the daughter dies. And what happens? We know what happens. In other words, when the daughter dies, and that is that the husband inherits it. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda ben Achos, Shal Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chinin, Al Yedi Havei Maisa. Right, this happened with me. So, and I'm telling you, the widow's still going to get supported. Meaning that this, the idea that the ksuva and the estate supports a widow, doesn't matter what happens to that estate. Meaning that estate is passed over to the daughter, the widow's going to get supported. She gets married, the widow's going to get supported. The daughter dies. And now the estate moves over to the husband. The widow's still going to get supported. Okay, so what do you see over here? It's really simple. In other words, support is coming to the widow under all circumstances, regardless of what happens to the estate. So huvi yishtomi baye. So the Gemara says, so once we know that halacha, so now let's go back to our halacha. Our halacha is that a father writes over his entire estate to his children. And now you really want to even deliberate as to whether or not the father and his wife should be receiving for support from the estate. Of course they should be receiving support from the state. The Gemara says the cases are not the same. No. In other words, in the case of the widow, meaning she was being supported by her husband. Okay, so, and then the fact that he's no longer here. Okay, she needs to be supported. Meaning, right, that's one of the, you know, talk about theme alerts in the Torah. Take care of the widows. Take care of the orphans. So over here, take care of the widow. So the fact that the widow is going to get support from the estate, so that's something which we are unbelievably sympathetic to, but not just sympathetic, meaning that's where she's getting supported from. But over here, the father's still alive. So you know what? The father wrote over all of his assets to his children for whatever reason, for whatever motivated him to do so. Okay, fine. So now he wants the support. Okay, so he's go to work. Okay, so so you could have seen an easy distinction between the cases. So Kamash Malan. So that's what we're learning right now, and that is in Takana number 2 of Usha. So what we're learning is that they instituted that the father, even after writing all of his estates over to his children, should still get supported by the estate. That's number 2. Ibailahu, just wrapping up this Hilchasa Kavase Oleis Hilchasa Kavase. Once again, we're going to be asking the question: is this something that was enforceable? So Tashma, the Rabbi Chanin of Rabbi Yonasan, Havakami Asa Wagavra Gachem Nashkel Rabbi Yonasan Akare. And so what happens is that Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Chanin were together, and a guy comes over and kisses the feet of Rabbi Yonasan. Okay, earlier this morning, as I was learning with my chavrusa, so he's called that's called just simply meeting your Rav, your Sephardic Rav. That's what you do. You kiss him. Okay, Ashkenazim, not so much. But anyway, so Amalei Rabbi Chanina, my high. So Rabbi Chanina is now wondering, Rabbi Yonasan, aside from the fact that he respects you, he likes you. But in other words, he's kissing your feet, like there's a story behind that, right? So Amalei Kosim Nechasa Levanavu. So he says, yes, there is a story behind that. And that is that he wrote over all of his estate to his children. And V'asasinhu Lizane. Okay, you see that word a couple of times throughout Shas. And that is that I forced them, the children, to continue to support the father. Right? Asasinu me'usa, like get me'usa. Get me'usa when we get to get, and that's a forced get. Okay, so over here, I forced him to support the father. So now this idea that I forced him, that I compelled him. In other words, this compulsion, meaning if it's a takanas usha, so then what you do is the basin just simply says, look, it's on the books, and this is legislation, and we're just enforcing legislation. The idea that he's compelling him to do so, he applied pressure, so that means what? Means that this takanas usha never really took off. And in this particular case, he had to use some pressuring tactics in order to get him to support his father. Okay, Adkan. That takes us now to Takan number two. Okay, so far, what do we have on the books for today's daf? In other words, we just started today's daf, but what do we have so far? So we have two takanos usha. One is that you have to support your children even after they turn 6 years of age. So you have to support them. And takana number two is that if you write over all your assets to your children, to your boys, so you're still going to be able to be supported by the estate. Okay, that was number two. Number three, Amar Rabbi Elai. And what's it called? I don't know what's popular, what's not popular. That's for sure true. But if I had to guess, this is probably the most popular of the Takanas Usha. Amar Rabbi Elai Be'usha Itkinu HaMevazvez Al Yivazvez Yoster Mechamesh. If you're going to give tzedakah, so you don't give more than 20% of your assets. And this is the Takana they made in Usha. Tanya Namihachi, Bryce is supporting this as well. What's going to happen is that if you give away too much of your assets, and again, you're doing so for a good reason. You're giving it stuck up, but still, what's going to end up happening, of course, is that you're going to end up becoming poor. Meaning, of course, the Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of people who give stuck up. The Gemara in Tanis is very clear about that. Daf Tess in Tanis. So, yeah, that's true. But in other words, by giving stuck up appropriately, giving 10%. And just as a sidebar, it's not unimportant. It's extraordinarily important in terms of what is the source of giving 10% of your income to tzedakah. Meaning, we know that there's 10% that's given to the levium. That's called Maaser Rishon. We also know that there's 10% given to the aniyim, but that's Maaser Ani. And Maaser Ani of the Shemitah cycle is only 2 of the 7 years in the Shemitah cycle. But 10% of your earned revenue, of your earned income, that goes to Aniyim as well. Where do you find that in the Torah? Okay. Answer is, you're not. You're not going to find that in the Torah. So where is that coming from? Okay. So that's a really important discussion. The Gemara in Tanis really touches on it. Not really. Tosis over there talks about it more extensively. Okay. And this is a much discussed topic, which is an important topic. But right now, we're not there. What we're learning right now is that don't exceed 20%. So the Gemara says, somebody wanted to do it and was stopped by his friend. Who wanted to do it? Rabbi Yesheva. Amrila Rabbi Yesheva, v'lo inichu chavero manu Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Yesheva and Rabbi Akiva were the principals in the story, unclear who wanted to give more than 20% of their assets. Either Rabbi Akiva stopped by Rabbi Yesheva or Rabbi Yesheva stopped by Rabbi Akiva. However the story goes, in other words, right there, for the person who is magnanimous, for the person who is very altruistic, he'd like to do so. Yeah, but don't. Don't give more than 20%. Okay. In the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. So, no, not in that Sefer. But a Sefer that was written by the Chafetz Chaim called Avos Chesed. So in Avos Chesed, it's, by the way, you know, doesn't need my recommendation. But it's very good. In other words, it's really straightforward. It's easy to read. And what does he talk about? He talks about the mitzvahs that basically are mitzvahs bein adam lechavero, right? And not a smattering of them. Anyway, one of them he talks about is tzedakah. So he speaks about he gives details, practical details in terms of how to give tzedakah. And there he goes over that there are notable exceptions. In other words, even though the Gemara says, right, by force of takanas usha, one should not be giving more than 20%, but he points out over there are a number of circumstances where he should be giving over 20%. Okay. Anyway, see Avos Chesed for more on that. So they made an English translation of it. It's very good. It's very well done. Anyway, Amar Rav Nachman b'Temer Rav Acha bar Yaakov Maikra v'chol asher titen li aser asron elach. Okay, we're going to look for support in the psukim for this. Now, I know it's a takana. So in other words, this is not a dinda araisa, but, right, as we find time and again, if we can find a precedent in the Chumash that supports an idea, so we love it. And Yaakov makes a pledge, and that is that I'm going to give 10% plus 10%. So the Gemara over here doesn't love the math. So v'halo dami yisur basra li yisur kama. Well, if I'm giving 10% followed by another 10%, that doesn't equal 20%. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. Like I said, lots of accountants here in this room. Okay. Fine. Anyway, so it's not 20%. So I'm Rav Ashi Asrina LeBasra Ki Kama. So the Gemara says no. In other words, the way you understand the pasuk is that the second 10% is equivalent to the first 10%, meaning of the original, not of the remainder. Okay, good. Anyway, it's an asmachta. It's just a way of connecting the psukim to the takana susha. Okay, I'm Rav Shimei Bar Ashi, Ushmos Halalu Mismaus Vahochos. So now this is a really nuanced observation. Okay, a little too much admission over here, even if I would have gone over the Gemara numerous times, right, Baruch Hashem? I did go over the Gemara a couple of times in preparation of the Daf. But I'm not sure if I would have picked up on this so quickly. But the Gemara does. Gemara picks up on it, and that is that if you look at, so far we went through three Takanas Usha, and if you look carefully in terms of how it was presented to us, not how, but who presented to us, so in the first round it was presented by three Amoraim. In the second round it was presented, in the second Takana, two Amoraim. In the third one, it was presented by one Amora. And you'll see that, like, for whatever reason, a name gets chopped off. Unclear why, but those are the facts. So that's what the Gemara is just simply observing. Ushmus halalu misma atos va'ochos. They get smaller. And I just explained how they got smaller. Visimancha ketanim kasu vizvizu. And now, you want a good mnemonic to help remember the first three Takanas Usha that we did today? And this is a great summary on the first part of the daf, right? Normally, I do this on my own, but here, the Gemara does the work for me, and that is that ketanim kasvu ubizbizu. That, in other words, you couldn't make this as a sentence, an independent sentence. Children write and they squander. Okay, but it's a mnemonic. Meaning, and now what it's supposed to do is that you go over each word of the mnemonic. And that is ketanim, that's a reference to the first takana susha that we learned, yesterday's daf, the beginning of today's daf. You gotta support your children. You're required to do so, meaning even though you're not obligated to do so after six, but Usha instituted that you should, you absolutely should. Number two, that's ketanim. Number two, kisvu. When a person writes all of his assets over to his children, he's still going to get supported by the estate. So I call it an estate, by the way. It's not an estate, meaning, in other words, it's the kid's money. But you're going to get supported by it. And bizbizu, and that if a person wants to give a lot of tzedakah, so don't give more than 20%. Okay.
It's interesting that by the third one, the Gemara doesn't inquire if the halacha is like that.
Yeah, 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 right. Enforceable or unenforceable, right? Right. Great observation. Right. Rav Chaim points out over here that the first two, the Gemara asked the question: Was this enforceable? How accepted was it? And for number three, Gemara doesn't comment. Amar Rav Yisrael Bushu Itkinu. Okay, so we are now up to the fourth Takana Susha. Okay, I think by the end of today we're going to see five in total. So here's the next one. Okay, it happens to be that for me personally, so I'm the first day I'm teaching. I've been in school already for a while, but first day I'm teaching today happens to be apropos. So itkinu shiyada miskagol and beno achshem asar shana mikan ve'elach yoridim olachayev. Okay, up until your kid is 12 years of age. Now this is talking about your own children. So up until your kid is 12 years of age, so relax. Okay, so right, anyone who is teaching children under 12, please don't listen to me. But the, but in other words, your child doesn't want to learn up until 12. Okay, right. In other words, don't get wound up. That's fine. However, from 12 and onward, so then you should get wound up. So and you apply a lot of pressure in order for him to learn. Okay, see Rashi over here in terms of, Rashi gives very clear examples in terms of the kind of pressure that you should give. It goes without saying that just because we learned the Gemara today doesn't mean that we all became experts in chinuch and pedagogue. I've been doing this for a while and you're right, I still got a lot to learn. Anyway, but the Gemara over here, Takana Susha, is that up until 12 you can relax, and from 12 and onward, so then you apply serious pressure to learn. Eni, the Gemara says, now wait one second. I'm throwing out the challenge. V'hamer le'rav le'rav Shmuel bar Shilas b'atzer mi bar Shis lo tekaba. Bar Shis kaba v'safer le'keturah. Below 6 years of age, don't accept him into the yeshivas or the cheders. But after six, so then not only do you accept him, but stuff him like a bull, like an ox. In other words, really get a lot of information into him. So the Gemara says, "In safer le'keturah miu enu yoridim olachayev." So the Gemara says, okay, but there's no discrepancy over here. There's no stira. Meaning that if the child wants to learn at 6 years of age, So then, by all means, like, get as much information into them as you can. And this part is obvious. And that is that the more they know, so the more they're going to appreciate learning later in life. So good. So what you want to do is that you want to stuff him. But in other words, but don't force him at that point. I mean, if he doesn't want to go, so don't force him to go to yeshiva. So ad la'achar she'masar shana, until 12 years of age. At 12 years of age, so then you apply the pressure. So, v'yibayzem alo kasha halamikra halamishna. Alternatively, we could say the following. Stuff him like an ox, that's by chumash, by psukim. So, Torah shebichsav. So then stuff him like an ox. But as far as mishnayos are concerned, wait until 12 years of age. Damar abay amri li'em bar shis l'mikra bar eser l'mishna bar tleisa l'tanisa. Meis le'esu v'tinokos bas tresar. And the Gemara points out, here's your schedule. And Abai quotes his mother. And how many times have we seen this? Many. So, number one, 6 years of age. So that's already when you should be starting Chumash. And 10 years of age, you should be learning Mishnayos. At Bar and Bas Mitzvah, that's when you should be doing the full fast. Okay. And also remember the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma talks about, preparing for fast days, one fast in advance, two fasts in advance. Okay. Anyway. Amar Abai, Amar Liam. Okay, as long as Abai is quoting his mother, and again, his mother meaning his foster mother, so a couple more points over here. Hi, Barshis de Tarkavale Akrava, Biyuma de Mushlam Shis, Lo Chaye. So, you have a 6-year-old that got bitten by a scorpion, he's not gonna live. Maya Suse, but there is medication that you can give him, and that is Meridita Didaya, Chivarta. Okay, this week's Parsha. Daya is one of the non-kosher birds, right? There are 24 birds in the Torah that are mentioned that are not kosher. The rest of the birds are kosher. Okay, our struggle in life is that we don't know the identity of the bird. So the only birds that we eat are those that we have a Mesorah. Otherwise, we don't eat it. Okay, anyway. So one of the birds that are not kosher is called the Daya, right? Dalad Yud Hei. And so what you do is you take out the gallbladder of the Daya. It happens to be the white time. And B'shichra, and you mix it together with beer and Ishafya. And you rub it on the bite, on the area where the kid was bit. Vinishkaya, also let him drink a little bit of it as well. Okay, the diet is not kosher. Okay, but in other words, we're talking about a sakana over here. Okay, good. So he drinks, and that will be a remedy. Once again, I'm about to say don't try this at home, right? We don't even know what the diet is, so we don't even know how to try this at home. But if we did, don't try this at home, right? Already going back many years ago to the Gaonim. Already, they slapped a ban on using any of the remedies in the Gemara. In other words, don't do it. Don't use any of the remedies in the Gemara. They do not work. Happens to be that there, even the Gaonim say that there's one notable exception. Okay, you can ask me later, and I may reveal. So a high bar, but I don't even think that one you should try. So a high bar shasa detarkle zibura. Okay, let's say you have a child, the baby over here. That got bitten by a bee. B'yuma demishlam shasle. He's a year old. So lo chaya. Once again, this is critical. And so maya susei atsusei dedikla b'maya nashpashet v'nashkaya. So take off the resin, off of a palm tree, mix it together with water, rub it on the area, and have him drink some of that water as well. Okay. Amarav kitina kol machnas esbita pachos I'm sorry. Klamachnis is beno. Pachos mi ben sheish, ratz acharav eino migio. So, if you put your kid into cheder at under 6 years of age, so it's going to really weaken him. So, igadar mi chaver ratz in acharav ein migino so. Some say that he's going to outpace his children. Well, which one's right? So the Gemara says, vitarveu isnehu. Chalosh vigamer. They're both right. Meaning, as far as physical is concerned, once when you put him in cheder at such a young age and he's not running around, so he's going to be physically weaker. On the other hand, because he's learning at such a young age, so he's going to be far ahead in terms of his peers, in terms of chachmas haTorah. So, or the Gemara says, alternatively, it could just simply be that one's describing a child who is very young but also very strong, and the other's describing a child who is very young and very weak. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Be'ushit Kinu. Okay, here we go. We're back. Back to Takanas Usha. So far, over the course of yesterday and today, we have covered now 4 Takanas Usha, and here we are now up to number 5. So, Be'ushit Kinu, Aisha Shemacher, Benichzim, Alug, Bechayibala. Umesa Habaal Motzim Yalakuchos. Okay. So, just a little bit of information we need to know in order to appreciate the fifth takana, and that is that when you get married, so, and your wife comes into the marriage with assets, with property, so it's hers, right? The properties don't transfer over to you, but what you do get to do is you get to enjoy the malug. You enjoy the fruit of that property, right? Right. Previously, I probably described it as dividends, but let's now talk about actual property and fruit growing on the property. And you, the husband, are going to enjoy all of that fruit. That's what's called the peiros. Okay. And just a couple of days ago, what was it, Mem Zion? So we went over the various quid pro quo, the reciprocal obligations and benefits that the husband receives. And peiros tachos pirkuna. The husband gets the peiros, and in exchange for that, he's going to ransom her, redeem her, if in fact she's taken into captivity. Good. So the husband gets the peiros, which means now that he has a certain holding on her property. Now, he's not the owner of the property. He's just getting the peiros. Okay. Now, there is much to discuss over here regarding king and peiros, right? Remember the machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether king and peiros is king and aguf, alav king and aguf. Tosus over here discusses, is our Gemara going like Reish Lakish? Is our Gemara also going like Rav Yochanan? Good. But as far as the daf is concerned, I'm going to go forward. Meaning, but see Tosus for that discussion. But meanwhile, so the following now. In Usha, they institute the following. The wife has the properties. She sells the properties while she's married. So now what the husband can do is he could say to the purchaser, hi, how are you? And right now that we're done with the pleasantries, that's my property. And I'm going to be able to go ahead and collect that property. Why? Because you're a lokeach, I'm also a lokeach. And again, we're going to put the word lokeach over here in quotes. He didn't actually purchase a property, but the chachamim view him as a lokeach. And my lokeach precedes your lokeach. I'm first in line. You're second in line. That property belongs to me. Right. Okay, good. It happens to be. I'm prepared for that question. It's a machlokus. But it happens to be, I'm not just saying that, meaning it happens to be, I know it's a machlokus. In other words, your question, sorry, let me just repeat David's question, because in other words, the Gemara says that he gets that property. Is that immediately after she sells it, he just simply gets it right back, or only after she dies does he get it? Okay, so the Gemara is not clear about that point. And I'm just simply pointing out that is debated.
But he talks about that during her lifetime, she actually sold it.
Yeah, correct.
So there's no issue there. He still has the rights to the produce and property.
He still has the rights to the produce by the...
Correct.
Well, that's not clear. In other words, Takana Susha says that he gets to be lokeach number one. So
after the death.
Okay, good. You're saying
during her lifetime, though.
I understand you're saying that. But as I'm pointing out, it's not super clear cut. The Gemara sounds a lot more clear the way you're saying it, for sure, but that's open for discussion.
He can't sell this because Peiros belongs to him.
Yeah.
Is he obligated to set aside money for the ketuba or not?
Which ketuba? What?
In other words, he's married.
Yeah.
He takes all his assets, he writes it off, and gives it to his children.
Right.
He's obligated to pay that ketuba.
In other words, she has a lien.
Right.
Doesn't matter who he gives it to. Perfect. Okay. So Meisav Bal Motzi Miyad Lekuchos. Ashkechei Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Rav Yabal David Kai Bechlusa Deusha. So they found Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, who was amongst a lot of people. So Amalei Man Mara Deshmaita Deusha. Okay. Nu, who's the author of this statement? So Amalei Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. So he said Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. In other words, we received it via Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina. And Tanamine Arban Zimnim Vedamele Kamanda Manchale Bekisasa. Went over it 40 times. In other words, not only did he want to know the halacha, he wanted to know proper attribution, who to give credit to, call Omer B'Shem Omro. Okay, so anyway, so Ashrei, we're fine. A little bit of Agadita to take us to the next section of the Gemara. Ashrei Sharmei Mishpat Oseh Tzedakah B'chol Eis. So the Pasuk in Tehillim. So somebody's giving tzedakah all the time. V'chi Efshel Lasot Tzedakah B'chol Eis. Really, you could do that? So Darshu Rabbi Sena Shebiyavne, V'amilei Rabbi Lazar, Zeh Zan Bano V'nosav, Kishen Kitanim, supporting your children while they're young. So that is considered, that falls under the category of tzedakah. Again, over 6 years of age. So Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmini Amar Zeh Megadu Yasam V'yasama B'soch Besu U'masiyam. Raising orphans in your house and marrying them off, that's another example of constant tzedakah. Hon ve'osher beveso v'tzaka omeres la'ad. Wealth in your house, and tzaka omeres la'ad, and tzaka will stand for you forever. And Rav Hun v'Rav Chisda Chanan Bar Zeh lo mitor melam da. So somebody learning Torah and teaches it over. That's a reference to somebody who is accruing and giving at the same time. And v'Chanan Bar Zeh kosev Torah nevim k'suvah ma'asim u'mash'ilam la'acherim. So you're writing Sifrei Torah, and not only that, but you're lending it to somebody else. So once again, something that you accrued and shared it with others. Urei banim levanecha shalma Yisrael. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi kem shabanim levanecha shalma Yisrael. Once your children have children, so shalma Yisrael, so now there's going to be peace. Now what does that mean? The Gemara gives a couple of pshatim. Delo asu ledei chalitza v'yibom. So one pshat of the Gemara is that once you have children, so then in the event that your wife becomes a widow, she'll never be subject to yibom. And that's a good thing. Yibam chalitza, it's uncomfortable, right? I know we just spent the masechta talking about it, but it is, by design, it's uncomfortable. So once you have children, there's no longer a mitzvah of yibam. There's no longer, she no longer has a zika. Oh, okay, good. So that's Shalma Yisrael. Additional to that is that once you have children, so now what happens to your estate? You know exactly what happens to your estate. Your children are going to inherit it. Meaning if you have an estate and you don't have children, so what's going to happen once you die? So relatives are going to come in and they're going to fight. Now, it happens to be that the children also are going to come in and they're going to fight. But at least we know who the recipient are of the estate. But in the event that you don't have children and you die, so what happens to your estate? So a lot of fighting that happens over it. Okay, so once you have children, Shalma Yisrael. Okay, a couple pieces of Agadata. Okay, Zeh Medrash Shtarz Reb Elazar Lifnei Chachamim. Okay, we are now going to be spending the rest of today's daf. Nun Amud Beis, and that is going over the support for the daughters. Okay, part of tonight's suva is that not only is the widow going to get supported by from the daughters, but not only are the widow going to get supported by the estate, but the daughters are also going to get supported by the estate. Meaning that the brothers are going to be inheriting the entire estate, but as part of the tonight's suva, so the daughters are going to get supported by the brothers and the estate. Now, this is an obligation, meaning we're no longer in the world of Takanas Usha, meaning this is part of Tanaik Suva. Okay, so this is absolutely obligated. And because it's an absolute obligation, so she's holding a lien against those assets so that she's going to get supported. In the event that they default, so she'll go to Basin, Basin will just simply collect. Now, normally, what serves this as a security against any obligation? We all know the answer. Property, real property. So that's going to be securing this obligation. What about movables? What about metaltalin? So is there a lien on movables? So the answer is no. Now, in other words, there is no lien on movables. However, for the support of the daughters, so we are going to be deliberating over the entirety of the Amud Beis of today, and that is maybe. I know that's a terrible answer, but that's what we're going to see. Maybe. Yosef Rav Yosef coming to Rav Amnon of Yosef Rav Amnon v'kamer k'shem shein abanim yorshim elam in a karka kachin abanim zinzonis elam in a karka. Well, the sons only inherit property. The daughter's only going to get supported by property. Now, as you're hearing this, hopefully what's happening in your head is, what do you mean the sons are only inheriting property? That's not how Yerusha works. Yerusha is that, you know what the sons inherit? The entire estate, movables and real property. So avash alei kulei alma de shavik arei hu di yarsei lebana de lo shavik arei lo yarsei lebanel, and everyone loses their mind, right? What are you talking about? I don't even understand the first part of your comment that the sons are only inheriting property. That's not true. So amalei Rav Yosef v'dema ksuvas ben indichen kamar mar. So Rav Yosef says, everyone please settle down. I know what he's referring to. He wasn't talking about Yerusha. He was talking about ksuvas ben indichen, which I'm going to explain momentarily. So Amrle Mar de Gavar Rabba Hu Yada Mai Kamina. He says, oh, wonderful. Rav Yosef, thank you. In other words, you're a great man and you understood me. That's exactly what I was making reference to. Okay. So let's take a moment now to explain Ksuvas Ben Indichren. Okay. What I do yesterday, it came up quickly in the Gemara. And what I did is I pushed it forward. I said, in a future day, I'm going to tell you about Ksuvas Ben Indichren. Okay. Today's a good day to do so. Okay. And it happens to be that Rashi over here, It describes it in great detail. And just again, as I get older and older, I appreciate Rashi more and more in his clarity. I hope to be as clear as Rashi in presenting Ksuvas Ben Indichren. But I'm telling you though, better than hearing it from me is just reading Rashi. But I'll do it anyway. And so let me explain Ksuvah's ben indifferent. Ksuvah's ben indifferent is the following. Okay, when a person dies, so what happens is that he has a lot of sons, and forget Bechor for now. And what happens is that it's an equitable distribution of his estate amongst his children. Every one of the boys is going to be receiving an equal portion of the estate. Okay, and that's called Yerusha. Okay, and so that means to say that if a man is married to, let's say, multiple women, so and they die and then he dies, so again, all those assets and all that estate that he amassed is just simply going to be equitably divided amongst the children. It's really straightforward. It's simple. Okay, now, what happens is that every time a woman marries a man, so she comes in with a certain amount of assets. It's an adunya. In other words, her father gave her a lot of assets to go into the marriage, and so now, from the father's perspective, let's enter into his thought process. My daughter's marrying this man, that's wonderful. But my daughter's not going to be the only woman he marries. He's going to marry other women as well. Okay? And what's going to happen? I'm going to write over so much of my assets over to them. And now what's going to happen is that when my son-in-law dies, so not only are my grandchildren going to be inheriting my assets, but other grandchildren as well from other women are going to be inheriting my assets. Thank you, but no thank you. And what it's going to do is it's really going to cut down the amount of dowry that a father is going to be giving to his daughter to go into that marriage. Chachamim thought of this, and the Chachamim said, okay, here's what we'll do. What we'll do is that we will make as part of the contractual ksuva obligation the following, and that is that whatever dowry you wrote into the ksuva, whatever money she's coming in from you, they are first going to be given to your grandchildren, and then after that, and only after that, then Yerusha, then equitable distribution of the remainder, of the balance. And that's what's called Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. Now, there are many details regarding Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. I'm only going to give one more detail right now, and we'll talk more about Ksuvas Ben Indichrin over the balance of this Masechta. One important detail, and that's the following. So let's say a man was married to multiple women. Let's just deal with two, because it's easy to illustrate. And they both have now dowries that came into the marriage, and the dowries were written to the Ksuva, and the women die, and then he dies. So now, how is the estate divided? Now, with Ksuvas Ben Indichrin, so first and foremost, let's get out the Ksuvas, let's see how much each dowry was. So now, let's say one dowry had $1,000, the other dowry had $2,000, fine. So kids of this woman, you're getting $1,000 off the top. Kids of that woman, you're going to get $2,000 off the top. However, and obviously, now what just happened, by the way, everyone see what just happened? That's an inequitable distribution of the estate. Good. That's called Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. This is an institution that the rabbis instituted. And again, going back to what I said moments earlier, it's to incentivize the father-in-laws to give more into the dowry. Good. Now, what happens? What happens now is that whatever remainder there is, that's going to be equitably distributed. The Rashi points this out over here. We're going to see this in the Gemara later on. And the only way, the only time that the rabbi is going to institute Ksuvas Ben Indichrin is only if there is a remainder. Meaning, there has to be a dinner remaining of the estate so that at least we can fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of Yerusha. If through the vehicle of Ksuvas Ben Indichrin there is no remainder, so that the Chachamim can't do. They can't rewrite the laws of Yerusha. And so then, basically, what happens is, scrap Ksuvas Ben Indichrin, and then the entire state just simply gets equitably distributed amongst the children.
If the father wants to game the system, what he can do is, before he dies, he gives all his belongings to the children.
Okay, good. Oh, God bless us Jewish people. We're so good. We're so good. Okay. I'm gonna press forward. I do wanna finish up. And not only that, but today I'm really on the clock. So let's move ahead, and we'll come back and explore Ksuvas Ben Indichrin later on. Anyway, but what was the point? The point is that by Ksuvas Ben Indichrin, what's securing that? That's only going on property. Ah, that's exactly the point. Ksuvas Ben Indichrin is going only on property. Support for the daughters is only going to be secured by property. And so now, Ibai Lahu. Before that, I skipped an important line. So, Amar Rabbi Chaya Bar Yosef, Rav Zan, Michita de Aliyah. A girl came to Rav. She's a Yisoma. She lost her father. And the estate went to the brothers. She came to Rav and she says, I need support. So Rav says, no problem. Rav goes to the brothers, goes to the estate, takes wheat, meaning cut wheat, and gives it to the daughter as her support. So what did Rav do? Rav took metaltolin as support. Now, moments earlier in the Gemara, we learned that the only thing that secures that obligation of supporting the daughters is only real property. And Rav took movables. That's called controversial. So, now, it was not clear what Rav was collecting it for. Now, I said that he was collecting it for mizonos. The Gemara suggests maybe that's not right. Maybe, in other words, the story's true, story's factual, but we don't know why he collected the wheat. Maybe he collected it for parnasa. Now, what is that? That's the halacha we're going to be hearing a number of times over the course of this masechta, and that is that when the father dies and the daughter now is going to get married, the orphan daughter is going to get married, so the dowry is going to be written. Who's deciding how much dowry? There's no longer a father. So here is, it's a very difficult halacha, and we're going to have to figure out how much the father would have given. Meaning we all have a recollection of the kind of generosity and the kind of father he was. And so Beis Din is going to have to figure out how much the father would have given. Okay. And I know that's hard. But anyway, but that's what's called parnasa. Right? Parnasa is another word for dowry. Right? I know just yesterday we called it a ksuva. Okay. But anyway, that's the, so that's the halacha of Shmuel. Now for that, Rav was collecting. Okay. That's one possibility. But the other possibility, Ol Dilma, Mizone Mamishavai. Or alternatively, no. In other words, what the Yisoma was asking for was not for a dowry, but she was asking for food. And what Rav was doing is was collecting from the estate. And not only was he collecting from real property, but he even collected from movables as well. We learned in our Mishnah that for the support of daughters, that's only collected from real property. Yeah, but a takana was made, a special takana was made. Be'aliyah, in the second story, right? Not exactly sure what the Gemara is making reference to over here, but in other words, there was an institution made, a later institution made, that daughter should be supported, even from metaltolin.
They're also in Kusha twice. They went to the Sanhedrin and the Kusha twice.
Could have been. Tashma biyade de Rabbi Banai, echud de Rabbi Chia Baraba, hava metaltolin de Yasmei. Also, come to Shmuel, Amrle, Zilzon. Shmuel also said, go support the daughter. Now again, zilzon, my love lemazone. Now the word zone means it sounds like it's support. And what he is enforcing is the collection of even movables for support. For the support. Uchid Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef is fearlay, and he's holding like Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, the one that we just learned. The Gemara says lo. Alzom la parnasa, havai ushmul atamidam, ushmul la parnasa shamim ba'av. And the Gemara says no. That it wasn't for mizonos, it was for parnasa, it was for the dowry, and for the dowry that's collected even from metaltolin. Okay, hava uvda benarada and vidon dayani denarada. So there was an incident in Narada. Again, the orphan daughter was looking for support, and the dayanim of Narada said that they were going to collect from the estate not only real property but even movables as well. Bipumpa disa v'agbe Ravchana bar Bizna. Pumpadisa as well, and Rav Chana bar Bizna collected from movables. Amlu Rav Nachman zilo ahadru v'ilo magbina lechu la'apad naichu mi naichu. Rav Nachman says to these judges, you went rogue. That's not right. Meaning, you cannot collect for the support of the orphan daughters from movables. You can only collect it from real properties. And Rav Nachman says that was such an egregious miscarriage of justice. And you were so off on your ruling that what I'm going to do now is I'm going to collect from you, the judges, for ruling so incorrectly. Now, this takes us to another major discussion regarding what exactly is the culpability and liability of a judge who rules incorrectly. And basically, the rule of thumb is that Toh B'Dvar Mishnah, if you make a mistake on a Dvar Mishnah, on something which is so clear and so well known, so that is... That is something which you are liable for. You, the judge, are liable for. It's so interesting that Rav Nachman considers this to be a Toh B'Dvar Mishnah, collecting for the daughters and collecting only from real property, not from movables. And Rav Nachman felt that that's so obvious. Everyone knows that. And meanwhile, the entirety of today's Amud Beis, we're discussing and deliberating this very issue. Okay. Yeah, let's pause over here. Okay, right, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi. Everyone put a bookmark over here. Okay, we're pretty much done with the daf today, but a little bit more to go. But anyway, I'm going to run. Let's go over today's daf. It's very simple to review. Takana Susha, right? Today's daf was dedicated to Takana Susha. We went so far over today 5 different Takana Susha. It all started with our opening discussion today regarding the Takana. Sorry. I wanted to go in order. Right. Regarding Ketanim, right. So, regarding the supporting of your children after 6 years of age. So, father should be supporting his children, but that's Takana Susha. That was number one. Number two, person writes over all of his assets to his children. So he's still going to get supported from those assets. That's Takana number two. And if a person's going to be giving, don't give more than 20%. Okay. So those are the 3 opening Takanas that we learned over the course of today's daf. Takanas 1, 2, and 3. The Gemara actually gave us a mnemonic to help us remember those first 3. Next Takana. And that is, when should you start really putting the pressure on your son to learn? So after 12 years old, and only after 12 years old, you should be putting the pressure on your son to learn. Before that point in time, don't put on pressure. Another Takana Susha. The Gemara tries to measure that against other statements regarding when's the proper time to start really getting your son into learning. 6 years of age, right? 10 years of age. Okay. Anyway, but the Gemara tried to make sense of it all. That was another Takana Susha. And finally, the Amud Beis dedicated itself to the topic of when supporting the daughters, meaning that the father died and there is an obligation for the estate to support the daughters, and that's part of the Tanai Ksuva when supporting the daughters. So they are certainly obligated to be supported, or let's say it better. The estate has an obligation to support the daughters. What is open for discussion? The only thing that's open for discussion is collecting from the real property, the real assets, or even collecting from movables. Some Amoraim collected from movables. Rav Nachman thought that, no, that's not what you should do.